Hello, hello, hello.
There's
some craziness going on down here.
People are getting warmed up.
Yeah, people are getting super excited about this podcast.
So to speak.
So this is the Big Planet podcast number 15.
15. That's a lot of podcasts.
How's it going, Planeteers?
I'm gonna
make that catch on.
Heart.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah. So let's see. What are we doing here? My name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
I was going to give you guys nicknames this time.
I'm the shark. Or I was the shark. What am I now?
I don't know.
You got nothing.
That's why I said I was going to give you nicknames.
I was trying to remember the names of the Planeteers, but it didn't work.
Heart. There's water, fire.
Does Captain Planet count as a Planeteer?
No.
Oh, well, no. Then I have no idea.
Because it's Captain Planet and the Planeteers.
Yeah, he's like their creepy ward.
I think it's Earth, Wind, and Fire are the Planeteers. Yeah. All right, so... Here's the whole spiel. Let's do the spiel.
Do it. Break it down.
I need sound effects for the spiel.
Okay.
Spiel effects.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. So subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
Yep.
Do it.
Yeah, you built a spiel.
No choice.
Be in love with us on Facebook.
Aw.
If you like us on Facebook, you can now look at what we're doing in your regular feed. And then in the secondary Facebook that's up in the corner now.
So you get like twice the amount of Big Planet podcasts.
We're double awesome. The Facebook. Exhibit will love you if you do that.
Yeah. While you're at it, you might as well tweet about us.
Tweet about us on Twitter. And introduce myself this time, it says here. Oh, wait, I already did that.
Oh, hey, success.
Yeah. So this is on BigPlanetComics.com as well.
Yes. For free.
I always feel like telling people all those different things. There. Well, you must already be doing one of those. So they're like, oh, geez.
But you could do all of them.
All right, so let's do some news. We don't have any news this week. Let's do some viewer mail. All right, so we got some viewer mail here. This is from Pivo. He's a friend of the show and a friend of us as well.
Yeah.
And he shops
an acquaintance.
He's a friend.
He's a friend. He's a good guy. Pivo has this to say. He says, hello, podcasters. Hey, that's us. Your podcast is the best, and I heart it big time.
Aw.
Yeah, that's good. However, I must take issue with part of episode 14.
Ooh, whoa,
I don't like where this is going.
Only part of it we're doing better.
All right, let's move on to reviews.
He says, I believe Kevin, that's me, confuses the beloved creator of American Elf and Peanut Butter and Jeremy with the television hero Kolchak the Night Stalker. It says here that his name is pronounced Kolchaka and not Kolchaka. Your massive podcast audience must not be led astray.
I think it's Kolchaka.
Kolchaka. That's what I said.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, like Kolchak the Night Stalker.
It's yeah, James Kolchak the Night Stalker.
So, sorry, James Kolchaka.
Is it Kolchaka?
It's Kolchaka, but it's not Kolchaka.
Okay.
Chewbacca.
It all sounds like gibberish now. But yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, he did a book called Fungus that we talked about last week. It's very good. He does lots of really good books. And now I feel terrible. I'm like the worst person that ever lived.
He's a fun guy.
Oh,
I heard what
do
you
we
did.
Have a boo sound effect on here? That's definitely the X-Men opposite. Music.
The opposite of boo.
Now I feel that validated.
I need to remember which button that was. That was amazing. All right, so but Pivo also has questions besides berating me. He actually wanted to know some things as well.
Oh, okay.
So he says, also, here are two questions for your esteemed comics panel. Yeah, two questions. He's getting a little greedy.
I like it.
Oh, good. We get to talk about the DC 52 books. We never get to do that.
Oh, yeah. So people don't know there are new 52 books from DC.
Yeah, new 52 new books.
52 new books from the DC new universe.
Yep. So here we go. Question number one. Which DC new 52 book do you think will be canceled first? You know, we've talked about this a little bit. Not on the show, I don't think, but in the store.
We did.
I think it's hard to say because we haven't read them all yet from next week's. So
I think it's going to be one of the ones from the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Captain Atom.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be Captain Atom.
I hope it's Hawk and Dove, but it's probably Captain Atom.
Yeah. Mr. Terrific, maybe.
I don't know. Mr. Terrific
I hope not, because Mr. Terrific was actually good.
Had potential.
Yeah
to but be even really good.
Nobody likes it.
I'm trying to think. They're Batwing might not make it very long.
Green Arrow will probably make it, but with a vastly different creative team.
Yeah. JT Kroll. Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, I guess we do have some news.
Rewind.
Yeah, let's go back to some news for a second here. So a lot of the solicits just came out for the fourth issues on a lot of these DC books. And we're seeing some changes already.
Yes.
Like, for example, Action Comics is now co-written by Grant Morrison and Josh Fiakov. It's got like four artists on it.
Yeah.
There's also a different artist on Swamp Thing.
Oh,
Plus. John Rosam has left Static Shock already.
Wow.
Yeah.
And JT Kroll was fired off of Green Arrow. Or he left. He left. I guess whatever. He went.
He should have been fired.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty interesting. It seems like they're definitely very interested in the idea of getting all these books out on time, which is something they talked about before.
But maybe at the expense of writing and artists?
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that.
When Peter and I went to that DC presentation about this launch, they said then that...
Peter Casaza, former co-host of the Big Planet Comics podcast for 1 week.
I was going to put him down as a guest.
Nah, he was a co-host.
Yeah. Co-host Peter.
He was something.
Yeah, he was something. They said to us that they were really committed to stuff coming out every month on time, and that if a team or an artist or a writer could not do it, they'd take them off the book. Right?
Seems like they're doing.
Yeah.
There's one her.
Oh, yeah. She's pretty good, so they won't take her off.
Well, and Nicola Scott's going to be doing the... what was the series they just announced that she's going to be drawing?
Oh, is she drawing something?
Wait, that's a girl? Not like Nicola Scott.
Oh, like a girl. Well, I think it's
a girl. No, it's Nicola.
Yeah.
Oh. Or I don't know. I don't know how it's pronounced, but anyway, she's a woman.
Anyway, we talked about the thing she's going to be drawing. It was one of the series that got announced later, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah, now I don't
Huntress,
know.
Maybe?
Yes.
Penguin? Is it Huntress?
Oh, God. I don't know.
Whatever.
Oh, well.
Shade?
Anyway.
We'll let you know when it comes
out. So that was a little bit of news, right?
Yep.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, back to the viewer questions.
Yeah, back to the question. So, I say the book that's going to be canceled first is Captain Atom. Nick says Captain Atom, and Jared says probably Captain Atom, but he hopes it's Hawk and Dove.
Correct.
All right, so this question to me is more interesting.
Uh-oh.
By that, I mean your first question was terrible, Pivo. What a terrible question. So question number two, which DC property do you wish had been part of the new 52? I know one right off the bat, but I'll let you guys go first and steal my thunder if you say the same thing as me.
Ooh, this is going to take me a minute to think.
Yeah, is it?
I'm blanking.
Just go with yours first.
Commandy.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Commandy, for people that aren't in the know, because a lot of people wouldn't know Commandy because he hasn't really been around, but... Commandy is the last boy on Earth. It was a Jack Kirby sort of post-apocalyptic or way, way post-apocalyptic comic.
Yeah.
Just about a kid who's like the last boy on Earth, and it's amazing adventure.
But it's not just last awesomeness. Boy. I guess he's the last human boy on Earth because everything else is run by like humanoid animals.
Right, right.
It's awesome.
I was thinking of what maybe like one of the Seven Soldiers characters, like the Guardian maybe, or like Bulleteer. Like one of those.
I don't think we're going to see a Bulleteer comic, although that'd be pretty cool.
We saw Frankenstein.
They're in there. Other ones. Or even Newsboy Legion.
Oh my God, Newsboy Legion.
That would have been a neat, like, you know, crazy comic that's not like about like one single superhero or a team of superheroes. It's just kind of about these crazy newsboys.
Another Jack Kirby creation.
Which one?
Newsboy Legion.
Oh, yeah.
But Jack Kirby-ness seems to be a little bit missing from this new universe so far. Except although, I guess there were... that's true. I'm talking out of the side of my mouth here.
Yeah, and they're bringing back the New Gods in Justice League.
So. Yeah, I mean, there were some Darkseid affiliates. What are those guys called? Parademons? I think that was a parademon.
That was a parademon.
Yeah, so...
There's at least two of them.
Never mind, I'm talking out of my butt.
Everything I'm coming up with is like, you know, Enemy Ace or like the kind of old genre comics they did, which I thought would have been really good.
But Blackhawks is kind
of... They're going to do Blackhawks, and I'm sure they'll show up in Men of War and
I think
like
Enemy
that.
Ace will probably show up
in All-Star Western will get all the weird Western stuff, so, yeah.
So you don't feel like there's a superhero that's missing from the mix somewhere in here?
Oh, superheroes. I think just characters like...
Anybody.
Young Love or, you know, any of the good romance
Young
stuff.
Love.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What other super also a Kirby book?
I don't really think about superheroes. I was just thinking more like weird characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll think about it for next week.
Good job. I'd like to see Orion show up.
Orion, yeah. So, I'm assuming he'll
parademon stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be in the dark side stuff.
So. Oh, well Peepo has a nice little sentiment here at the end. He says, "I wish you continued dominance of the comics podcasting world."
Nice.
I wish for that for us too, Peepo.
We definitely read more comics than probably any podcast should ever read.
We do.
This week was definitely true.
This week was bad because Jared and I actually had to talk to Nick before this podcast because we were like, we can't remember what happened in some of these comics.
There were so many this
week.
There
were so many.
I have a good memory. We're actually not like Attack.
We're not reviewing as many as last week, but it's still quite a lot. And then Peebo says at the end, "Yours truly, Peebo." So that means that he really means it.
Oh.
It's sweet.
Yeah, that is sweet.
Is there an emoticon?
Yeah, it's like, but it's offensive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's an 8 and some equal signs, and I don't want to talk about the rest of it.
Nice.
All right, so let's move on to reviews.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
I'm totally over this song, but Jared still cracks up every time, so it makes me feel like I don't have to record it.
No, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. It's I got to so figure good. Out what rhymes with J.T. Kroll.
Scroll
or somebody told me his last name was pronounced Cruel, which I think is appropriate.
JT Cruel.
Yeah. All right, so let's jump right into the sort of weirdest book that we're going to talk about. Well, I don't know, but it's called Astonishing Secret of Awesome Man. This is a hardcover. This is a children's book, basically.
Very children's book.
Written by Michael Chabon. Yeah, let's go with that. And illustrated by Jake Parker.
Parquet?
Since Jared can't remember what most of the books are about this week, but I bet he remembers this one because it was pretty easy.
It had a lot of words that were typed really big.
Yeah, Jared, a lot of drawings. Why don't you tell people what it was about?
So basically, this is Michael Chabon, whatever his name is. Now that he's got all these kids.
Whatever his name is.
I'm just saying. I don't know how to say it. Anyway, he's got a bunch of kids now, and so he's trying to come up with some stuff that would be appropriate for his kids to read. So this is like his take on doing a very incredible style, like, kids comic about a superhero. It would be the Awesome Man.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I like the most about this is all the words are really big, so I didn't have trouble reading it. Not like big, like they're not. There's no big. the other good thing is there's no big words. Like I could read it, you know,
it's large text with small short syllable words,
and then I can get on with my life.
That's true.
I mean, this is one of the books that I read near the end after reading like 28 comics and like 5 graphic novels. I was like, ugh, why am I reading this?
Yeah, this is definitely like a beginning kid's book. It's not a challenging young reader's book.
That's certainly true. This is a book for 3, 4, 5 year olds, maybe 6 year olds.
Yeah, it has a nice sweet ending though.
I mean, yeah, yeah. No, it's a cute book. I used to work in a bookstore, so I saw a lot of books like this come through. And you know, I'd say this fits in pretty well with like the sort of Olivia books and things like that. Just, you know, big picture books for kids. And it was fun. It's cute.
On one note, I think this book would never actually get published if it was anybody else.
Yeah, I think that's potentially true.
The art was really good, though.
Yeah, the art was good. And it's, yeah, I mean, if you have kids the age that like the sort of toon books, like Silly Lily or...
what was that bear book from last week?
Otto's Orange Day or, oh yeah, what was that bear book? Benjamin Bear or whatever.
Benjamin Bear.
Yeah, this is more like a level 2 book.
It's
yeah.
level 2. No, this is like level -1. Anyway, that's Astonishing Secret of Awesome Man. It's always good to see that kid-friendly comic stuff is coming out, and that's what this was. So that's about that.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so moving on. Of course, we've got a bunch of DC books this week. There were 12 of them.
Unfortunately.
What's DC?
DC is...
for Detective Comics.
Yeah, DC Comics. Detective Comics Comics.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah. So the first one we're going to talk about is Batman #1. This is by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. Scott Snyder, you guys will probably know, wrote Detective Comics. Or maybe you don't. I don't know. But now you do. And he also wrote the Iron Man Noir miniseries. He writes American Vampire. He's writing Severed.
And he wrote... what did you write last time? Totally blanking.
Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing. Thank you.
Bless. Yeah. Swamp Thing.
It's good you're here, Jared.
I'm prompting everyone to remember things.
And Greg Capullo, you may know he drew Spawn for a long time.
Is it Capullo or Capullo?
Is it Capullo?
I have no idea.
There's 2 L's in it. Well, I'm going to say he's Capullo.
He basically drew like Todd McFarlane when Todd McFarlane left like Spawn.
Yeah. Yeah, under the name Todd McFarlane is what a lot of people say.
A lot
of the Todd McFarlane stuff was drawn by Capullo.
Wow, funny. Nice.
But yeah, then he drew it forever. Or it seemed like forever.
This is definitely his best art.
This is his best art. Although, well, let's talk about the plot a little bit. Nick, why don't you tell people what this Batman book was about?
Well, it's about this millionaire who whose parents get killed, and he decides to become a vigilante.
Wait, how do you know his parents get killed? I don't remember mentioning that in this comic.
That's true. There's not a retelling of the Batman origin in this comic.
No. But anyway, everybody knows who Batman is. It's like anybody picking this up who doesn't know who Batman is just like came from Mars or something.
I didn't ask who Batman was, though.
No, but yeah, anyway. This
Joker knew he'd just go to his house and kill him.
This issue is basically starts off with Batman and Joker fighting a bunch of criminals in Arkham Asylum.
Working together.
You find out, I guess, I mean, I don't know how much I want to talk about
this. Don't tell him. That's a good twist.
Yeah, no, that's...
There's a little bit of a twist to that, and then there's a little bit of Bruce Wayne having his own kind of story where he's trying to rebuild parts of Gotham. And that leads to... There's, like, a lot of, like, subplots brewing with the mayor and all sorts of stuff, and then there's a crazy, like, twist at the end, which is cool.
Yeah, there's, like, a sort of murder mystery thing that they're setting up and a lot of political stuff. One thing I really noticed about this book was that, you know, when Snyder was writing Detective, it was like these kind of really small stories. You know, it was like just a story about James Gordon's son,
like short stories,
things like that, and more personal kind of. And then because he's writing Batman now, I feel like this is a very much like a book with a much larger scope.
Right.
But I think he handled all the elements of it really well, and it seems like he's laying out something that's going to be pretty interesting over the long run.
Yeah, Nick, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's like he introduced a lot of the major players in the Batman universe, even from books you haven't seen in a while, like Vicki Vale. I don't know if they've used her in a while and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the beginning has like every...
Yeah, and they're like, just like, here's this person, this person, this person.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's good because it kind of, you know, a lot of people wonder what the relationships between the characters are right now with the new universe launching. And so they kind of, you know, show you what his relationship with Damian is, what his relationship with Tim Drake is, and Dick Grayson, and kind of all the former Robins.
Yeah, and then
except Jason Todd, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
They hint a little bit. They when they show the villains, they're like, here's all my villains, old ones and new ones. And the new one's like, you know, James Gordon or whatever. And he's like in the corner, like, being all creepy.
But overall, I thought it was really good. I thought it's, you know, we say this a lot, but the twist at the end of this book was pretty interesting.
It was.
DC's been pretty smart with all these number ones. They're like, let's just stick like a big twist at the end of all these books.
Yeah. Also may or may not tie into the twist at the end of Nightwing.
Yeah.
Which
so
we'll get to.
Yeah, we'll get to that as well. But overall, I thought Batman was a good book. I thought it was better than Detective Comics.
I agree.
And I thought it was better than Batman and Robin. And I liked Batman and Robin a good bit. So
I actually think I might have liked Batman and Robin better.
I could see that. Batman and Robin's definitely like a more cohesive, fun story, and it gets right into it.
But that's true. Also, I had like a lot more expectations going into this because Detective was so good, where like I felt like I wanted more of that. This is like very different, but it's good. And maybe, you know, I'll get into it more once it goes along.
I feel like with so much stuff being set up in this first issue that this series is going to pay off a lot more than Batman and Robin will in the long run.
Yeah.
We'll see, though. I mean, but I think all of us liked it, right?
No, it was great.
I thought it was really good. Yeah. And the art was, like Nick said, was the best he's ever drawn. So
yeah, he tried something. It looked different than he did before. It looked like you could tell he was trying different things, and then he was, you know, kind of working with it to make it look unique, which is cool.
Yeah, there are little hints of McFarlane and Spawn-ness in here, but it's a lot cleaner. It's not that kind of sketchy David Finch-y kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's a cool book. It's definitely, I mean, if you're a Batman fan, you should buy this. This is Batman number one.
Right. But yeah, even if you're not a Batman
worth,
fan.
Like, it's worth like $80,000 already.
Yeah. True.
It came out like in the 40s. Anyway. So yeah, that was Batman number one. Moving on to another Bat Family book.
Like a lot of them this week.
Yeah, there are a lot of books that take place in Gotham.
Yep. Bats of Prey.
Gotham is becoming the New York City. New York City is to the Marvel Universe as Gotham is to DC these
actually,
days.
Actually, did you notice that in some of these new DC books, they're actually kind of making more of the characters live in like real world cities?
Oh, that's true. Like Hawk and Dove was in DC.
Yeah.
But they've always been based in DC.
Have they?
There was one really glaring one. I can't remember which one it was, but that used to live in like a...
Like Superman
a made up city
from Metropolis to New York City.
we'll figure it out. But anyway, so this is Birds of Prey number one. This is by, God, these people's names, man. What's wrong with people that write comic books? This is by Dwayne Skwierzynski.
And Dwayne Straczynski?
Yeah, I always want to call him Straczynski, but it's Swierzynski, I guess. Sounds or that's good. Pretty close.
Swierzynski.
Right. And this is drawn by Jesus Saiz. Or Jesus.
Jesus says.
Yeah, Jesus says.
Jesus says.
Yeah, so the basic setup in Birds of Prey was interesting enough. I mean, it's Black Canary. The team's Black Canary, Katana, a new character called Starling. And it's basically about a reporter who's been kind of following them around and seems to know what's going on and seems to like know a little bit about their secret identities and things like that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because this is kind of like Gail Simone's book. You know, forever.
Very much so, yeah.
And they try to include some elements of the previous stuff. Barbara Gordon makes an appearance in this. Well, on the cover, actually, has Poison Ivy, but she hasn't actually...
Yeah, I imagine she'll be in this first storyline, but not in this first issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got Justice League syndrome.
But yeah, this was actually better than I anticipated. The art's great. I liked it a lot.
You see, like, Jesus says, like, his art is kind of the dynamic stuff where, like, there's a fight scene. You can see, like, how people are churning and kicking and the impacts and stuff handled really well.
Yep, there's definitely a lot of kicking in this.
A lot of screaming.
Yeah, there's a lot of screaming. No, but it was cool. I mean, I thought it was an interesting setup. I thought that this guy kind of discovering things about these characters is a good way to reintroduce some of these characters to people. And it's got a crazy twist at the end.
yeah.
Like, every book.
But this was a cool... like female book with like strong female characters, which wasn't hyper sexualized like some of the other ones
like
that came out.
Like some
weeks.
Of the other books that we'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, no, I thought it was a good setup, and I thought, you know, this Dwayne Straczynski is not a guy who I really follow. I mean, he wrote Punisher for a little while. He wrote Cable.
Yeah,
and I don't usually love his stuff, but I thought that this was a really solid first issue.
Yeah,
definitely one of the better DC books that came out this week for sure.
This seems more into his like line of stuff because he's like kind of a, I think he writes like mystery novels, kind of like crime stuff, which just seems a little more tied to that. Like it's kind of a, you know, detective comic basically.
Yeah, it works. And the new character, Starling, is pretty interesting. She's very cocky and no, it's cool. It's a good book. So moving on to another DC book. Basically, this week is almost all DC books. So I think we've got three or four things that aren't. But, you know, there were 12 DC books this week.
Yep.
One more week of this, of all the DC books. And then
thank God, I'm tired of reading so many comics.
I know. I'm still going to read a big chunk of these after the first one. But we're definitely not going to be talking about them so much on the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So the next book is Blue Beetle number one.
Ay, papi. This book is hot.
This is by Tony Bedard with art by Iguara. Yes. And Tony Bedard, you know, he wrote Rebels and he's written some other things. I'm not usually a huge fan of his writing.
He wrote Green Lantern Corps for a while.
Yeah, he wrote Green Lantern Corps for a while. But I thought this was pretty good. The biggest problem with this, Nick was talking about this earlier. So you tell people kind of what the problem is with this, which is also explaining what the plot is at the same time.
The thing I've been asking people as they've come into the store is like, they're like, is Blue Beetle number one any good? And I'm like, oh, well, did you read the last Blue Beetle series? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, you'll like it.
That's, I'll agree with that.
The main thing, it's such a huge problem for me because I read the old Blue Beetle series. This issue is exactly the same as the first issue of Blue Beetle that came out like a few years ago. Where it's, you know, the Blue Beetle is like just some, you know, like he's like his kid and he's like, he's got a, you know, really maybe bordering on stereotypical Hispanic family. Like his best friend is kind of like a cholo, like, but it's exactly the same as the first issue. And he's even fighting the same villain who's like mysteriously like not there. They don't show her face, but I know who she is. She was in the last series.
No.
And then like she controls like a kind of a mob family and she has supervillains that work for her and Blue Beetle fights them in the old series. And that seems like that's exactly what's happening.
So it's like if Batman number one had, you know, a young kid getting his parents getting killed in an alley and that'd be their relaunch.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because I actually think it was a well executed book.
Right? No, it definitely.
But it's exactly the same as the old Blue Beetle.
Yeah. Did it have the space sci-fi stuff in it?
Yeah,
the sci-fi stuff is a little expanded in this one. I feel like, but
a little bit, but not. I mean, it's exactly the same in that because in this they show that the Blue Beetle scarab in the beginning is kind of like a thing that's meant to like take over the world or whatever, which is exactly what it was in the old series.
Oh, yeah, really? It's very very similar.
Well, which that's disappointing. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, I didn't know that because I hadn't read much of it. I even think I started the first series, but I didn't keep with it. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, so if you want to read Blue Beetle and you haven't read Blue Beetle, this is good stuff.
Yes.
And if you have, it's like, I'm sure it'll start to branch off. It'd be amazing if they got to like issue 15 and it was still like exactly.
It was exactly like issue 15 of the old Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, so. But overall, like, it is a well-executed book. Iguar's art's really good. It's really expressive.
Yeah, like I said, if you haven't read any of the old Blue Beetle stuff, this is great.
Yeah, but if you have, then you've read this already.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to Captain Atom number one.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is written by J.T. Krull, who wrote...
J.T. Krull.
J.T. Krull. I forgot about that. So this is written by J.T. Krull, who, of course, writes, like, heroin comics about people with iPads who beat up cats.
Yeah, as we've said before.
And this is drawn by Freddie Williams II, who's actually a very competent artist. He's worked on so many different things. He fills in a lot, but...
I prefer Freddie Williams III.
I always see Williams II, and I think it's going to be J.H. Williams III, but... Yeah, Freddie Williams also did, DC puts out these guides like to writing and penciling. He did one to digitally creating comics. That was actually pretty interesting. I mean, if you're interested in breaking in and doing that stuff. But yeah, this was Captain Atom.
I like the art all right.
No, the art's good. The art's fine. I don't like the character design. But I guess we should talk a little bit about what the story is about. Basically,
do we have to?
We do. Yeah. That's our job. So it starts out Captain Atom's like fighting a robot. And like his hand starts to turn into like it just starts to like turn into like a weird metal melty.
It starts dissipating.
Yeah, basically. Dissipating a little bit. And so he freaks out about it and he goes back and he talks to his weird guy.
He's got like there's like he goes back to basically, I guess, his headquarters, but it's the place where he was created. And there's this crazy like scientist in a wheelchair who seems to know everything and a woman that's kind of his like guide. And
it basically says, you know, this can be expected, like that your hand would do this, but if it happens to your brain, basically you're gonna die. And yeah. then all these natural disasters start hitting, basically like a volcano pops up in New York City and he tries to stop it.
I'm glad you guys told me that, because having read all the other comics this week, this is the one that I started blurring out on. It's kind of skimming and skipping, and I've missed half of that plot.
It's very poorly written.
It's got a lot of extraneous word captions.
Yeah, it's weird. It's got a lot of internal monologue from Captain Atom, except somehow by the end of the book, he still has absolutely no personality.
Yeah.
And it's... Ouch. Yeah, I know.
God, I really like this book. Wait. Oh, I mean... I really did not like this book.
Oh, there you
yeah.
go.
I mean, there's a reason we all said that we thought Captain Atom would be the first book to be canceled.
Yep.
It's not a character people are very interested in. And, you know, the way Captain Atom was used in the old Justice League International stuff was really...
A lot better.
It was a lot better. And because it was written by writers that had senses of humor. Yeah. And
crazy.
Well, I know. I feel like I'm being so mean about
it. Is J.T. Krill going to be off this book?
No, I think the only book they've announced that he's off of is Green Arrow.
Yeah.
So which is interesting, because he wrote that book for a long time.
Yeah, and it sucked then, and it still sucks, but like people didn't care.
Yeah, so Captain Atom is, for me, the worst book of the relaunch.
Nope.
Nick still says Legion Lost.
Legion Lost, still the worst.
And Jared,
Hawk and Dove, man.
Jared can't get over Rob Liefeld, I can totally understand.
I read Hawk and Dove, or at least read most of the Captain Atom, I just skimmed.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Hawk and Dove was the first week too, so we were all like, you know,
we're trying harder.
At least Captain Atom
running
had,
on fumes at this point.
At least Captain Atom had sort of a story that made sense and stuff was happening. You could follow it.
It did. No, I will say it is competent.
Legion Lost was like two pages in. I was like, I can't read this anymore.
Well, that's what happens to me a lot with Legion books, and unfortunately, we'll kind of get into that when we get to the new Legion book, which I can't tell if it's bad or
not. Next,
but anyway, yeah. So the next book is Catwoman. Catwoman's gone a while without her own series. I'd say at least 3 or 4 years, probably. Yeah. And this is written by Judd Winnick, who has written his fair share of Batman family stories, and of course, plenty of Catwoman stories.
He was on the Real World.
He was on the Real World. He was at odds with Puck, who I was a big fan of.
Oh, I didn't know you're a Puck man.
Yeah, I'm
Puck.
I'm a Puck man. and this is the art in this is by Guillaume March, who.
Is amazing.
Is amazing.
Mind blowing.
Yeah, he
good.
Drew Gotham City Sirens for a while when it was written by Paul Dini, and later on he actually wrote it as well.
He can draw the ladies.
He can draw ladies, which he goes on to prove in this Catwoman comic.
He does.
This was an exciting comic. Let me just tell you.
So the first panel of the Catwoman comic is Catwoman's boobs,
in bra,
and then it maintains kind of, the momentum.
A skimpy factor.
Well, you see her bra three times in this comic.
Well, in the first page.
Well, three separate times.
Three different bras.
Three different scenes with her in her bra.
So the basic plot is Catwoman, these people attack her because she says she's not sure why, but she figures she probably stole something from them.
Yeah.
And they destroy her apartment. They basically blow it up. So she needs to get new work to basically find a new place to live or whatever and get some money. So she goes undercover as a sexy bartender.
Like you do.
And almost immediately takes her shirt off in an attempt to beat up a guy who was kind of like a person from her past.
Yeah, yeah. It's somebody who like apparently looks like ran a child's sex slave ring or something.
Yeah, I think something like that. So it's weird, though, because it's dealing with like sort of really off-putting sexual things like that. But then it's like... mixed with like really overtly sexy imagery.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I don't know. It's weird because it's like, she's so sexualized in this comic and she's like, she's always half naked. But then you find out that she was like maybe a prostitute when she was like a little girl and it makes it like all icky.
Yeah.
It's
a weird comic.
I don't know. And that's basically it. And until the end where Batman shows up. And there is one of the most gratuitous sex scenes I've ever seen in a mainstream DC comic.
He is hitting that.
Yeah, it's like 5 pages of full on
getting down.
Yeah, it goes from base to base to base, and eventually ending with a grand slam.
I imagine some little kid walking in and be like, "Dad, why is Batman's pants down?"
Yeah, so this brings up something that I was kind of talking about earlier today with Nick in that. You know, these DC books are meant to be aimed at a younger audience, is what I thought.
Or at least new readers.
Or new readers, but something of a younger audience as well. And there's not a single Batman comic in here that I could probably legally sell to anybody,
yeah, yeah.
anybody under the age of 13.
Batman 1 you could do.
No, Batman 1 has a brutal murder scene.
Yeah, there's somebody with at least 20 knives in them nailed to a wall.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah. Never mind.
And then...
Withdrawn. Batman and Robin?
No.
Nope. And definitely not Detective Comics.
No, that one was awful.
And certainly not Catwoman.
No.
Maybe Batman and Robin. I can't remember anything.
I don't remember
gratuitous
anything
in it, but
too bad in Batman and Robin.
So this is all like teen up to like R-rated stuff.
Yeah, and even in Batgirl, there's like the villains are people that are like you know home invaders who are like murdering families and stuff like that. It's
true.
It's pretty intense, but
yeah, and Batwing's about like
there's a mass murder and
like genocide and stuff like that.
Yeah. So. But that's not to say they're not good. Actually, like most of those books were pretty good.
Yeah, actually, Catwoman was good.
Yeah, Catwoman was good too. Like, I feel like it's a little...
The message is a little weird.
Yeah, and it's a little intense, and it's a little too grindhousey or something for me. But
I thought it was great, and just like the opening scene where Catwoman is leaping out of her apartment window with her little cat carrier full of cats. The drawing of the cats he did was like made me fall in love with his art. It's so hilarious and so good.
Yeah, no, his art's fantastic. Amazing. And you know, anytime he draws a sexy Catwoman too, it's like it looks good.
Yep.
He's really good at it, but it's just, I don't know. It's just, the tone of it was a little weird for me.
Next.
Yep. Yeah, thanks. I like it when you do that.
I feel
that.
Like
that's
I'm
really
on MTV.
yeah, Next is definitely my favorite show on MTV. I like Dating in the Dark, though. Is that on MTV?
Oh, maybe.
That's where people go on dates in the dark.
Well, sounds like a good title.
Yeah. It's definitely an appropriate title. All right, so moving on to DC Universe Presents : Dead Man #1.
Colon.
That's colon, you know, like the punctuation.
Yeah, DC Universe Presents :
Dead Man.
Yeah, so...
it's got new powers.
This is by Paul Jenkins, who, to me, is famous for writing the Inhumans miniseries many years ago.
Jay Lee.
And also for writing the Sentry stuff for Marvel.
Both of which were very good.
Yeah, and art by Bernard Chang, who to me is famous for not being Cliff Chang.
Yeah, he's the other Chang.
He's the other Chang. His name's spelled differently, but I don't know much about Bernard Chang.
Me either.
Nick?
I feel like he drew something I read.
I bet you're right about that. All right, so...
He definitely drew something at some point.
Nick, you want to tell people what Dead Man was about?
It's about Dead Man. He's basically... this is a little bit of... a new story, but mixed with a little bit of his origin. And so, you know, you see how Deadman became Deadman, even though he was called Deadman before he was Deadman. And
that is the most convoluted thing you've ever said.
You see, there's a little difference in this, and I don't think this was in the old comics where, like, he when he dies, he meets, like, this entity that tells him, you know, you've done a lot of bad things in your life, and now you are going to be forced to help all these people who have terrible problems, and that'll lead you to redemption. And
so it's kind of
like
it's
a basic setup.
Kung Fu.
Yeah, and the first issue is like him in the body of a war veteran, and he's trying to fix his life or whatever.
And there's a big twist at the end.
What?
Didn't see that coming. Not a really big twist.
But there's a twist.
It's a middling twist.
But that's appropriate because it's a middling book.
I agree.
I thought it was all right. I kind of liked it.
All right is vaguely middling.
Yeah, right? No, I thought it was okay.
We're not saying bad.
It just didn't blow my mind. I felt like there was a lot of internal dialogue with Dead Man. Like,
yeah,
a
but
too much for me.
I thought it was real well written, like the dialogue and stuff. And I was kind of interested because like he's like once he dies, the entity is like, here's all the people you're gonna be, and he has like a weird connection to them because like the story that takes place in the present is like, he's helped a lot of people already, and he's like, all right, guys, let's do this. And so he still has a connection to all the people he's helped, whatever. So it seems kind of interesting. I don't know. I'll probably read the second issue and see how it goes, but I don't know how long I'll stay with it, you know?
Yeah.
The thing about this is that since it is DC Universe Presents, we're assuming 5 or 6 issue-long storylines focusing on a character and then probably switching to a new one or a new writer or something.
I would think so, which is smart. Yeah. I mean, or could be. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they pick the right characters, I think it could be good.
I'm pretty sure the next storyline is DC Universe Presents Bulleteer.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure that you just made that up.
Yeah, I did. Also, shouldn't this be called DC New Universe Presents?
Well,
yes, but that would confuse
me. Maybe this takes place in the old universe. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't think they're going to, I think that was just like saying, hey, we got a new universe.
Hey, check it out.
Hey, yeah. Check it out.
Check it out.
Hey, check out comics. Ooh. All right, so moving on to checking out a different comic. Do you guys like that? So this is Green Lantern Corps number one.
Who's it published by?
This is published by Detective Comics Comics.
Yeah.
And, no, so this is Green Lantern Corps number one. This is by Peter J. Tomasi, who had written Green Lantern Corps in the past.
Yep.
And it's got art by Fernando Passerin, who I don't know, but he does good art in this.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Yeah. Talented kid.
So the basic story of this is, like, Hal Jordan's trying to get a job.
No, not Hal Jordan.
Not Hal Jordan. Jeez, I'm so sorry. Well, basically, it starts out first with some Green Lanterns being murdered. But
no.
Because that's what happens. People get murdered a lot in these books.
It's Guy Gardner and John Stewart trying
getting,
to get jobs.
I'm getting to that.
Hal Jordan.
So Hal Jordan.
No.
So basically, Guy Gardner's trying to get a job as like a high school basketball coach. Yeah. And they don't want to hire him because they're like, you're a Green Lantern. You know, how are you going to be a basketball coach?
Aliens will come and kill all
you.
You got
a lot of stuff to do. Yep. So then we move on to John Stewart, who is, you know, famously an architect.
Yeah.
And he's kind of dealing with some white collar.
Like bureaucratic
bureaucrats
stuff.
He deals with them in the same way Superman does, by threatening to kill them and then driving them towards the ground from a higher place at a really fast speed, and then stopping right before they get there, not killing them.
Yeah.
And,
But there's a really funny line in this where, like, Guy Gardner and John Stewart are talking, and Guy Gardner's like, why don't we wear a mask? Like, Hal, I mean, everybody knows we're Green Lanterns. We can't get a job. Because, like, you know, he's like, I'm going to get a job as a school teacher. And they're like, you're a Green Lantern. You're going to get attacked by aliens or have to go into space and fight aliens. We can't hire you. And he's like, oh, man, I guess so.
It's true.
But then it's interesting, too, because they're like, well, we don't wear masks because we like it. We like the notoriety.
Yeah.
So, and then there's at the end of this.
Whoa, spoiler alert.
Yeah, should I not talk about the end of this?
Oh, well, it's not really the end of it. It's kind of in the middle and all of it. But a bunch of aliens get killed.
Yeah, no, it's on the last page.
Ooh, it is.
It's in the middle, too.
What a twist.
Yeah. But, yeah, no. So, basically, it seems like somebody's sending a big message to the Corps. And this seems, you know, I mean, it's Green Lantern Corps. If you guys have read it before, this is still, the tone is still the same. It's the big, you know, huge space stories with Green Lantern, as opposed to
the
more earthbound stuff that Hal Jordan tends to be involved in a lot of the time. And it's like it's a big story, and it's got a lot of humor in it.
Yeah, it's a good introduction to like the Corps in general, and like Guy Gardner and John Stewart, like the other Lanterns, you know, like
I think introducing them through like Gardner trying to get a job and John Stewart working in his job, I think that was a smart way to introduce people to the characters.
Yeah, it definitely humanizes them and, you know. Yeah,
grounds them.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. The only thing about this book and a lot of the books this week is, like, it wasn't, like, a big change. It wasn't a big mind-blowing change, which is kind of what I expected, but I think we all knew Green Lantern Corps was going to kind of stay the same.
True.
So speaking of books that have stayed the same, this is Legion of Superheroes number one. This is by Paul Levitz with art by Francis Portella. And
the art's good.
The art is good.
Yep.
I should preface anything I say here by saying that I am not a Legion of Superheroes aficionado.
No.
I'm a fan of the Jim Shooter stories from the 60s, and I was a big fan of Mark Waid's run with Barry Kitson on the book in the early 2000s. But beyond that, I am not a big Legion of Superheroes guy.
Neither am I.
So
yeah, you know more about it than I do.
So for me, and I love the Legion of Superheroes cartoon that came out a few years ago, but that doesn't count. So for me, this was like, I was really confused at the beginning. And then I guess, as Nick told me, this is a lot of story elements from previous story continuing. I don't think any of us really have too much to say about this book. If you were a fan of the Legion stuff before, Paul Levitz is still writing it.
Yeah. Yep.
And it seems to me like the tone is pretty similar.
Yeah, I actually talked to one of our customers today, and I asked him, you know, I was like, oh, you're getting this Legion book. Have you been reading Legion? He's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, well, did this character die and did this happen in this? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, well, this is pretty much just the next issue.
Yeah, I think it's just the next issue of Legion of Superheroes.
So this is one of the few comics that is almost a direct continuation with no revamps or changes or anything. But,
which is easy to do because it's a book that takes place, you know, in centuries in the future. So,
but that being said, this is miles better than Legion Lost.
Definitely.
True.
Although, you can follow the story and the characters are engaging, It's just, I just don't really care.
It's definitely a bit more of the same. So, all right. So moving on. And I want to say, I don't think Legion is necessarily a bad book. It's not a book that I know enough about to read. All right. So moving on. This is Near Death. This is a new Image number one, which is generally very exciting.
It is.
This is not published
by DC.
Not as exciting as Catwoman.
But. So this is by Jay Faerber, who wrote Noble Causes, which was a very good series. He also wrote a thing called Dynamo 5 for a while, which was also very cool.
Yeah.
And the art in this is by Simone Guglielmini. Yeah. So, Jared, you've been pretty quiet today.
Yep.
Why don't you tell people what Near Death is about?
I was blurred out by those DC comics. This is interesting because Jay Faerber, like Kevin said, is famous for all these superhero comics. But in the back of this one, he says that one of his real loves is crime comics. And this is his chance to kind of try that for a while. So this is basically a infamous hitman who's been out killing people for a long, long time, who fails on a mission and is shot himself and basically is about to die and has a near-death experience, hence the title, in which he is confronted in the afterlife or heaven or just hallucinating with everyone he's ever killed in his life, and is told by them to, you know, kind of go back and try and redeem himself by helping people instead of murdering people. And then he survives and he wakes up again and basically starts going out to kill people. But then he starts murdering people. Bad people.
Well, that was actually one thing I really liked about this book. As I was reading through this, and it's a cool concept for a book. It's actually very similar to the setup for Dead Man, but except he doesn't inhabit people's bodies. Yeah, but it's kind of the same
pistols.
Thing. So I was like, it was getting a little like new agey and wishy washy in the middle, and I was like, oh, is this guy gonna go on like a vision quest or something? And
then these crystals are telling me,
yeah,
these people are bad. I should kill them.
So, but then he goes out and he like shoots somebody like immediately.
Yeah.
Yep. So I was like, oh, okay, I'm down with that. Because who wants to read a book about an assassin who doesn't assassinate people?
No,
not me. Yeah,
boring.
Yeah. So no, Near Death One was a good setup. I think it's basically set up to tell a story in each issue, and hopefully. Cool.
That makes sense.
Hopefully at the same time, kind of tell the overall story of this guy.
There is a twist at the end that adds a story arc.
What
to
a
it.
Twist.
Yeah. So they took some advice from DC and put a little twist at the end. You got to keep people interested.
You do.
Yeah, it's true. All right. So moving on to what was probably the best DC book of the week. Definitely one of the best of the maybe. New 52. Oh, wait, never mind. This is no, this book was great. This was the new Teen Titans games.
Probably the latest comic of all time. It was supposed to come out about 25 years ago, I think.
yep, that's true. Basically, so I'm going to give you a little backstory on this. New Teen Titans Games is by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. Those are two guys. They worked on Teen Titans and New Teen Titans together.
When did they work on it?
That was probably like in 82, 83, something like that.
84, 85.
Yeah, in 84, 85, they were working on
Crisis.
And so after Crisis was over, Perez started working on Wonder Woman, which in his run on Wonder Woman is very popular. But they always wanted to do one more thing together, one more Teen Titans thing to kind of wrap things up a little bit. And so they started working on this graphic novel, which is the new Teen Titans games in 1987.
Yep.
Wow.
And Perez drew about 70 pages of it, and it just kind of got lost. You know, they went to work on different things, and for various reasons, it just didn't happen. So then they got back together in 2004, and they were like, all right, let's do this. And now it just came out, 2011. seven years after being, 20 years late, basically. Jeez. So, but it's, you know, it's a cool book.
Cowabunga. This is good.
The thing about this is it's not just, you know, they finally finished it, but they put it in a hardcover and it's an oversized deluxe thing. So like Perez's art is bigger than it would be in a normal size comic. It's
totally radical, bro.
Yes.
No, it's an interesting size. And the story's cool. It's you know, it's pretty simple. I mean, especially by sort of modern standards, I would say.
Yeah.
But it's like there's this guy, the game player, and or the games master, I should say, not the game player. And he's kind of messing with the Teen Titans. He kind of develops different enemies that are tailored towards each of the members of the team, and they fight those guys. And it's like basically a big fight comic book with a bunch of character stuff in it.
Yeah, figuring out who he is, how to stop him, how to not all die.
And then we both some major supporting characters bite it in this.
bite it. They bite it big time.
Yeah, there's definitely some exploding people. But no, overall, it's funny because a lot of the new DC books this week, I felt like some of the characterization of these characters just wasn't too terribly interesting.
I feel like all the writers should read this and then be like, oh, that's what a comic's supposed to be like.
Yeah, because as old-timey as this feels sometimes, and of course, Wolfman and Perez have been doing comics for more than 30 years at this point.
I mean, he's immortal.
Yeah. it's the personalities of all these characters really come through.
Yeah, it's great. Especially for a team book. It's not just like the elf personalities. They all have distinct personalities.
Yeah, like we'll talk about it in a minute. But the difference between Starfire in this book.
Oh, wow.
And Starfire and Red Hood and the Outlaws.
She's like a nice, innocent like teen and she's from another planet. But she, you know, she has a little bit of like.
I didn't
less of morals than everybody else, but not as much as in Red
Hood. Yeah, we'll talk about Red Hood in a little bit. But basically, New Teen Titans Games is a very well-executed graphic novel. You don't really have to have a lot of prior knowledge of these characters, but I would recommend...
And I really liked it.
But I would recommend anybody to go back and read the Judas Contract.
Yeah, they definitely...
Terra Incognito.
They definitely reference a lot of those older comics.
Yeah. But it's good.
And I think this will actually end up being the latest comic of all time, unless... Kevin Smith writes issue of Bullseye Target number 2 in like 30 years.
He could.
But he probably won't live that long. So.
True.
That's true. He is very overweight. All right. So moving on to Nightwing number 1. This is by Kyle Higgins.
Kyle Higgins.
Who I assume is related to Henry Higgins. You may know Kyle Higgins from My Fair Lady and Pygmalion. And this is drawn by Eddie Barrows, who is probably
he was in Mary Poppins.
You're such an idiot. Okay, so
it's a different Eddie Barrows.
yeah, it's a different Eddie Barrows than the other one that you made up. So, Nick, you tell people what Nightwing is about. You Mary Poppins lover.
Well, it's about this guy who used to be Batman.
that's true. That's a good thing to point out. Basically, in the new continuity. Nightwing is Dick Grayson is Nightwing again, but he was Batman.
He was Batman,
and he was also previously Nightwing and previously Robin.
Yeah. So in the last five years, Batman has had 4 Robins, and Nightwing became Batman and became Nightwing again. Well, he became Nightwing. He was Robin, became Nightwing, became Batman, and became Nightwing. All in the span of I don't know how long he was Robin for. I guess somewhere in the first, because he's not in. In Justice League, he doesn't have Robin with him, right? In like
that's 5 years. But that's only the first issue. So,
that's 5 years ago.
Yeah,
and so somewhere a year or two after that, he got Robin, and in those 4 years, all of this stuff has happened.
Yeah. So basically, Bruce Wayne needs to sort of he needs to start some sort of program where, like, if you do a good job as Robin, you get like a $10 Starbucks gift card or something like that. Just something so, like, he's not turning over employees so much.
Poor Stephanie Brown. Was she ever a Robin in this continuity? I don't know.
Probably.
Spoiler alert.
All right. So, yeah. But tell people what this comic is actually about.
This actual comic is about Nightwing getting in touch with his roots, going to check out, like, the circus he grew up in. And coincidentally, it's in town. And he's like, oh, I used to be Batman, now I'm Nightwing, which is cool because I feel like myself again. And he's like, oh, I'm going to go check out this old circus because it ties back to my roots. And then he goes back to the circus and he's like.
And somebody tries to steal his sunglasses and he's like, no way.
Yeah, he's like, no, man, I wear my sunglasses at night.
So I can spy on my girlfriend.
yeah. And so he goes back and he's like, oh, the circus is a lot different than I remember it being. And he does something really messed up.
Yeah, basically.
Well, I'm just going to say it. It's a spoiler a little bit.
Yeah.
But basically, he's like...
Oh, yeah. That's not a spoiler. You should definitely talk about that part.
There's a villain, and the villain shows up and is like, I'm here to kill Dick Grayson. And Dick Grayson's like, no, don't kill me. And he's like, I'm going to go change into Nightwing. And he
pulls a Spider-Man or Superman.
Yeah, and while he's changing into Nightwing, this guy kills 2 police officers. And then Nightwing comes back and is like, my bad.
That was totally my fault. Sorry.
It's crazy. Basically, exactly what he says is, hold on, I'm going to find this.
Is that what he says? That's on me.
Yeah, he says, that's on me. It's like, wow, that's a lot of remorse there, Nightwing.
He's like, whoa, whoops.
Yeah.
And well, he's in Gotham, so he's probably like, oh, those dudes were totally corrupt, but still, I shouldn't have let him in shot.
One thing, though, I thought was funny in this book, the book was okay.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it overall. I liked it. In general.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, it was good. I mean, the art's just all right, but I thought the story was cool. I don't know a lot about Kyle Higgins, the guy that wrote it, but I thought he did a good job. But there's a funny part in the middle where he's like, Nightwing's talking to a clown that's in the circus. And he's how's it going? He's like, how do you think it's been going? I'm a clown doing a show in Gotham. It's terrible.
And he's wearing a green wig.
Yeah. And like red.
He's basically dressed like a Joker.
Yeah. So, it was good, though. It was fun. I mean, I think Nightwing is one of the things that people are going to be most interested in because he's a character that hasn't been around in a long time.
Yeah.
And like Batgirl, it's kind of, one of the biggest changes, I feel like.
Yeah.
And it also had an interesting twist at the end.
It did. Imagine
what
that.
What a twist.
Imagine one of these DC
maybe
books
tied into the Batman twist.
Oh, that's right.
Potentially. I don't know, though. I hope so. But
I hope so, too.
We can't talk too much about that. But all right. So moving on to a book.
A book.
This book's called Red Hood and the Outlaws. This is written by Scott Lobdell.
Oh, who's that guy?
He's great. And then the art... you guys know Scott Lobdell. He writes...
whatever. Move on.
Yeah. I don't know.
Superboy and Teen Titans.
He writes Superboy and Teen Titans. He used to write X-Men a long time ago. We've talked about Scott Lobdell quite a few times.
Sung about him every week.
That's true. But the art in this is by Kenneth Rocafort, who drew Madame Mirage. And he also drew the Velocity miniseries. Which
An Action Comics for a little while.
I think is that Velocity miniseries. Did that ever finish? Is it still coming out?
Oh, anyway, maybe not the last
His art time. Is very good, though.
It's so good.
Jared, you said you liked this book.
I did, actually.
So why don't you tell people what it was about?
Oh, that I couldn't really tell you. It's Red Hood and some other dude hanging out. Was it Arsenal? I don't even know.
All right, let me tell you what the story is about.
Yeah.
So basically, it starts off with Arsenal, who was Speedy, and now he's locked up in jail, and he's being rescued by his friend, Jason Todd. Speedy's personality is a little weird in this. He definitely doesn't seem like he beat up a bunch of homeless people with a dead cat in this. But then
I'm going to imagine that has been retconned.
No, it's still part of the continuity. Okay. That's probably why he's in jail.
He found Islam while he was in jail and sorted himself out.
He does have a weird personality, though. He seems like he's like a little bit of a surfer dude or something, maybe.
Yeah, he's not as like evil. Well, not he. I guess he wasn't evil.
He doesn't seem like his children were recently killed.
Yeah. Jason Todd was the one that I was like, he was evil.
Well,
like
Jason Todd was purely evil.
His last appearance was like him just like shooting people in the face, and like in this one, he's like, he's kind of like that, but he's like trying to fix the world. And then,
so he rescues
Starfire. Has sex with both of them.
Yep. Well, first she is in a bikini, and this seriously.
Oh, that line.
The one about the 38s or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a line in this where he's like, who do I know that carries double 38s? Oh, her name is Starfire.
She's got two 38s.
And then, basically
blanked that line out.
The way Starfire is introduced in this is she's like bathing in the ocean. It looks like an Aspen swimsuit calendar.
Yeah.
From like 1997 or something.
Some little kids take a picture of her.
It looks like the Wildstorm swimsuit specials they would
that's what I was talking about. Witchblade and
like
stuff.
A little kid's taking pictures of her and he's like, I just became a man.
And so basically the way Starfire is characterized in this is basically she's like a high functioning autistic who likes to
alien
to have sex with people.
Yeah,
and it's I don't know,
it's rough.
Yeah. But Jared, you said you like this. So what did you like about it?
Well, that I didn't really know who any of these characters were. I had no comparisons of how they used to be or how well they were written before, you know, how they changed their characters. And so it was just two kind of action dudes and a hot girl just having an adventure. Like it's not deep at all. There's nothing else beyond that.
What adventure?
Well, at the end he's like, see, this chick shows up and they gotta go off and sneak off and do something mysterious.
Yeah, there's weird like hints like Red Robin or Red Robin. Red Hood is like Red Hood, who used to be Robin, is like, some crazy stuff happened in my past and oh no, it's getting tied into this story. But anyway, like I kinda like the beginning where there's kinda like a prison escape and it's pretty well told. But then once Star Sapphire shows up,
Starfire.
Not Star Sapphire, but Starfire. Whatever her name is.
Starfire.
Yeah, who's completely different from how she was in Teen Titans games.
Yeah,
shows up and she's like, just having sex, just great, like with everybody. And she's just like, hey, you want to have sex? And I'm like, oh, okay.
And she seems completely detached from everything, yeah. anything, which is, you know, kind of part of what her character was before, but it was, I don't know.
But not like this.
Yeah, it was presented in a
this
very...
This is demeaning.
Yeah, it was presented in a very lascivious, like, she's presented as an object. And, like, I feel like she's meant to be desirable because she's basically, like, emotionless.
Yeah.
And uh-huh. she's not going to get attached, which, you know, to... I wasn't really very happy with the way that was put out there. But
yeah,
anyway, weird. That's Red Hood and the Outlaws by Scott yep. Lobdell. I'm probably going to read the second issue, yeah. which is a problem that I have that I need to deal with.
You are a pervert.
All right. So moving on to kind of a strange book that came out this week. This is Star Trek number one by Mike Johnson and Stephen Molinar. This was interesting. We probably won't talk about it too much, but it was an adaptation of an old Star Trek episode called Where No Man Has Gone Before. Which, if you guys have read that, that's the one where...
Or seen it.
Or, yeah, I guess, yeah, sorry, if you'd seen it. It's the one where like, somebody on the ship basically sort of his mind is taken to this next level and he becomes one with the ship. And it's a very classic old Star Trek episode.
However...
But the interesting thing about this is that it's that story retold and kind of expanded upon and changed a little bit, but told with the crew from the recent Star Trek movie that J.J. Yep. Abrams made. So it's like the sort of Chris Pine.
It's all the characters from the newer Star Trek universe.
Yeah. And I thought it's well executed. It's a story I know, but I thought it was well done. The art's pretty good. A lot of times it's hard to get across, you know, like portraying actors in books and making them actually look like them and not look really stiff at the same time. Yeah. But I think they do a good job of this. And
they'll definitely look like their counterparts.
Yeah. And they get the personalities down pretty well they're pretty accurate to the new movie. And I thought it was fun. I think part of the reason why it worked is Robert Orky is a creative consultant on this book. And he was one of the co-writers of the script for the new movie. So I think that shines through. But no, I mean, if you're a Star Trek fan. If you're a Star Trek.
Yeah.
If you at least like the new movie, you don't have to be like a full on fan. But right. I mean, if you're a fan of the new movie, it's very cool. I mean, if you know the old episode, it's interesting to see their new take on it. And if you don't know it, it's a cool story. So it's definitely worth reading. Yeah. It's probably the best Star Trek book I've read in a very long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to Prison Pit Book 3 by Johnny Ryan.
Heck yes.
Yeah. So... I want to preface this by saying that Prison Pit is not a book for anybody under 18.
It's definitely NSFW.
And it's also probably not a book for most people over 18.
All children should stop listening to us right now.
Yeah, but Nick, why don't you explain basically what Prison Pit is in general? Not just this volume, but what Prison Pit is.
I'm going to say first of all that it's one of my favorite newer series, but... It's also one of those ones that I can almost not recommend to anybody I see in the store because it's really gross. I can't even say the things that happen in it.
It's almost by recommending Prison Pit to somebody. If they look through it and they don't want it, they think that you're like a total weirdo.
I need to know that the people I talk to are like kind of weird and that wouldn't be really offended by the most... messed up things they've ever seen, but I love it. God, I love
it. The plot of Prison Pit is kind of secondary to everything else that's going on, so it's kind of a hard book to explain. But basically, I think the main idea behind it, it's very similar to like a fight manga,
like
Dragon Ball Z, except it's much bloodier. It's much more disgusting. There's a lot of sort of toilet humor in it.
Yes.
And it's, you know, it's kind of the things that Johnny Ryan is famous for. Johnny Ryan, he wrote a book called Comic Book Holocaust. Used to do a book called Blecky Yuccarella.
It's also very different from all those.
It is also That's different true. From those, but it's also very much a Johnny Ryan book through and through. But it's Prison Pit. I mean, it is also one of my favorite comics coming out right now, but it is a disgusting comic.
Yeah, he seems to be having really like a lot of fun on this. And I talked to him at SPX like a couple weekends ago, and I was like, I love Prison Pit. I was like, how long is it going to go for? And he's like, you know, it's like six issues or so, but I'm he's like six volumes or whatever, and he's like, but I'm kind of enjoying drawing it, so it might be a little longer. And I was like, oh yeah, that's awesome. And I was like, this is great. And he's like, I was like, you seem like you're having more fun than anything else. It's like, he's like, yeah, this is like the best thing I've ever written. It's fun.
Yeah. The weird thing about this book is like, you know, you tell people it's gross and they're like, well, I read Crossed and Preacher and stuff. It's like, well, those books are, it's not like there's worse stuff going on in this book.
No.
But it's just like the way it's presented is just, it's just not for most people.
Yeah.
But if you like stuff like Orkstein, I would say
maybe,
I don't know.
If you want something extremely different, you should check it out.
I think if you have no qualms about anything, then you should read this.
I think Black Hole is like something that is sort of, you could recommend it to people that like Black Hole.
Maybe.
But
if
but
you,
more,
if you love potty humor and Black Hole.
But it's, yeah, it's so out there. It's more for people who like stuff like 1-800-MICE by Matthew Thurber, or like Lisa Hannawalt's mini comics that she's done.
Human Centipede.
Or no, not Human Centipede, because that stinks and this is awesome.
Anyway, out of all the stuff that came out this week, this is probably my favorite.
Yeah, it's probably mine too, but it's definitely something.
It's NSFW.
It's definitely NSFW. Yeah. All right, so moving on, we just got a couple more things. Ultimate Comics X-Men number one by Nick Spencer, who of course writes Morning Glories and a bunch of other stuff.
Existence 2.0.
Yeah,
and he's great.
Yeah, Infinite Vacation with art by Paco Medina. This is this is the fourth book out of the Ultimate relaunch that's been going on. So far, everything's been pretty good.
So it's like a new universe for the Ultimate books?
But it's not, though. Oh, it's the same universe. It's just starting with new number ones. But it definitely has a completely different feel.
Yeah.
And Ultimate X-Men number one was great, I thought.
It was amazing.
It was definitely one of my favorite books this week. It was the beginning's a little messed up. Basically, it starts out with Jean Grey trying to recruit or she has a different name now, but I can't remember what it is. But she's trying to recruit a mutant for Xavier's school. And basically, as she's there, the young girl's parents decide to put her out of her misery and shoot her with a shotgun, which is off screen, which is nice.
Yeah,
it's nice. But it's still pretty messed up. And then there's another little element of that scene that's something that's setting up some stuff later that I don't want to talk about. And then they cut to some of the events that happened in Ultimate Fallout, where basically everybody in America has found out that the government created mutants.
Yeah.
And it just goes from there into setting up a lot of storyline stuff. And it's just a really well done book, I thought.
Yeah, it's a good teens kind of come into grip with being like different and weird, which is kind of what the X-Men started off as like back in the day. And it's really closely tied to Ultimate Spider-Man a little bit, because some of the main characters in this are
the supporting cast from Spider-Man.
Yeah, like Human Torch, Iceman, and Kitty Pryde. And it also is, all the cast from Ultimate X.
Spider-Man's Amazing Friends, basically.
And it's awesome.
It's good. It's definitely sort of a combination of the old Spider-Man supporting cast, which was very mutant heavy, and the Ultimate X team. And it's good. I mean, if you're reading Ultimate Spider-Man, this fits right in as like a well-executed new book. And the Ultimate Universe was feeling a little stale, but now I feel like it's kind
of all of these new books again. Have been pretty good.
All been really good.
Yeah, so I think we all highly recommend that. All right, moving on. We just got two more books. So next is Supergirl number one. This is written by Michael Green, who I'm pretty sure wrote some Superman, Batman stuff, but I'm not super familiar with his stuff.
Familiar, but I'm not sure.
And this has art by Mike Johnson, who...
This isn't by Brian Wood?
No, it's definitely not by Brian Wood. But I was going to bring that art up when I was talking about the art. Basically, Brian Wood was supposed to be the writer for this book.
Oh, really?
And I feel like this artist is probably somebody that was drawing for Brian Wood, because it looks a lot like Rebecca Isaac's art on DV8.
Yeah.
And like, Ryan... Ryan Kelly's art.
It's great art.
That was the big standout thing for this book for me. The art in this is very, very good. Like I said before, if you've seen Rebecca Isaac's art, it's to me very similar to that. The story, on the other hand, is a little bit...
There's not much
been
to
there,
it.
Done that.
Much like Blue Beetle, it's exactly the same as the last Supergirl number one, where she's like, oh, I've crashed on Earth. Where am I? What happened? How did I get here?
But it's still awesome to watch it happen.
Yeah, it's such good art. Yeah, the pacing's really good.
Yeah.
And but it is, like Nick said, yeah, it's pretty much exactly the same.
In the end, there's a twist.
In the end, imagine that there's a twist. But yeah, no, but I thought it was fun. And there's just, it's such a big fight scene, the whole book, that it's kind of, there's not a lot to talk about. But
it's Supergirl.
Yeah, exactly. But the art's really dynamic, so the fight scene looks really cool.
Yeah.
All right, so last book of the week, and one of the best, is Wonder Woman number one.
Wonder Woman.
This is, Nick's probably been waiting all episode to do that. Yes. This is written by Brian Azzarello, who, of course, wrote 100 Bullets.
Johnny Double. Batman Broken City.
Superman for Tomorrow.
Don't mention. Why'd you have to mention that?
Yeah.
Why'd you have to go into
Hush?
Hush. Yeah, the other one. Yeah. And then the art in this is by Cliff Chang, who did lots of stuff.
Cliff Chang.
What is Cliff Chang's best
thing? Dr. 13.
He did a Spectre.
Yeah.
Miniseries.
He does
Batman
stuff.
Yeah. Everything he touches is amazing.
It's gold.
Golden.
So Wonder Woman has been relaunched numerous times in the past 10 years, I'd say.
Yep. Probably four times in the last 2 years.
Well, there was, let's see, there was the Greg Rucka stuff, which was about, what, 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah.
And then after that, there was
the Alan Heinberg stuff, right?
The Alan Heinberg stuff.
The then there female was, writer. And then. The novelist.
Tamara Pierce, maybe?
No, it was a
different one. Oh, Jodi Picoult.
Yeah.
And then there was the Gail Simone stuff. This might not be exactly in order.
That's four.
And then there was the Straczynski stuff.
That's five.
And those were all completely different takes on the character.
Yeah.
And what we have here is another completely different take on the character.
And the best one.
It's astounding.
Certainly the best one. I was, Brian Azzarello had been talking about how he's kind of looking at at least the first storyline in this Wonder Woman as a horror story.
Oh.
Which I think is really interesting, and I can totally see. It starts off...
definitely horrific.
Yeah. Wonder Woman is kind of barely in this, but in a way that, like, makes sense. They're setting up a lot of stuff, and it's so hard to talk about what's good. Like, almost everything in here is shocking.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's giving too much away to say really anything about
this. Let me just say the one thing that's really cool that might get people to read this is that there's a scene where somebody cuts off the heads of a bunch of horses and human bodies grow out of it to make them centaurs.
Well, that was the thing I was talking about that I didn't want to give away because I thought it was kind of a cool, shocking thing to read in the book.
Yeah.
But that'll get
people to read this.
Yeah, and I mean, so those people are attacking this woman, and we're not exactly sure why. And then she kind of disappears and wakes up, with the help of somebody else, and she wakes up in Wonder Woman's abode.
Yeah.
And there's a slightly sort of suggestive scene with Wonder Woman getting naked, but it's like...
But tastefully done.
But compared to something like Catwoman, it's like such a little tiny thing. And then, Wonder Woman kind of goes to help her out. There's a cool action scene, and it's like they set up so much stuff in this book.
Yeah.
The art is incredible.
The art is great.
Full of the Greek mythology, like used in a way that's better than I've ever seen it done with Wonder Woman before. And
there's kind of a mysterious villain who's very cool and very sort of cold and evil.
Yeah.
And it's paced in a really great way, and it's so readable.
And there's a crazy twist.
There is a crazy twist, like so many other of these DC books. But yeah, I think the one thing about this Wonder Woman book is it's like this to me feels of all the DC stuff I've read. Iconic. That are about the big established characters.
Yeah.
This one feels like the biggest change.
Yes, definitely.
But in a very good way.
A very good way.
I feel like they took a risk.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah. It's like for as little as Wonder Woman is this, you get like her personality and that she's likable and awesome. And
it's definitely a horror comic, but it's still like a huge, like epic, like God war kind of thing.
Very mythic.
Like there's like, I don't know. I don't want to say too much about it, but a lot of the Greek gods show up and there's a crazy war brewing.
Just buy it.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like when I read it, I feel like it's going to keep it getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
This is the best DC book of the week by far.
Definitely.
This is definitely the best DC book of the week. And that was week three of the DC stuff. So we've got one more week.
All right.
God, I don't want to read
of all
anymore.
This stuff. But next week's going to be good. There's some good stuff coming out. There's like iVampire. Justice League Dark.
All-Star Western.
Black
Teen Titans. Oh, wait.
Not Teen Titans. But, you know, but you guys will, I guess, find out more about that next week.
We'll see it.
When we come back on the next Big Planet Comics podcast.